I think I ought to start with a caveat, if I may, just in case there's anyone here from the Financial Services Authority. I am not authorised to give investment advice. If you feel that you're therefore in the wrong place, I do apologise, but do stay anyway, because it should be interesting. In fact, my approach to investment, my wife describes as counter-cyclical. If I buy something, it goes down in value. If I sell, it tends to go up after I've sold. Anyway, it's not something I'm really accustomed to doing, but I happened to be stuck in the car at about 6:30 one evening some time ago, and I came across a programme I'd never heard before called Genius. I don't know if anyone knows that round here. It shows what a sheltered life I lead, that I hadn't heard Carol Vorderman doing this before. But there were some brilliant ideas that came up. I'll give you some sort of idea of the quality of those ideas. There was sparkling Bovril, which moved on to sparkling custard after a while. There was the solution to global warming and the problem of rising sea levels, which obviously with the Stern report is very important to us. And that was to ban children from throwing stones in to the water and to remove all the whales from the ocean on the basis that would lower it. So it just gives you an idea of the quality of ideas. But one of the best of all was the idea that we should probably try and work out how much time we'd spend in retirement, and instead of waiting until we're older, to actually have that now. So have your 15 years of retirement now, and then come back to work after your 15 years are older and you've raised the children and so on, and just basically work until you die. Apologies for introducing a morbid element there. But actually, in reality, the pattern is we work out how long we're going to live for, what sort of return you're going to get on your money. We build up the assets until we retire, and then we run them down until there's nothing left on the day we die. Isn't that the perfect idea? The slight problem with that is, of course, we don't actually know when we're going to die. So we buy annuities sold to us by clever actuaries and distribution methods, which cream off all the money anyway. But anyway, that's down to the FSA to sort that out, please. But the actuaries sort out, on average, when we're going to die. Slightly alarming when an actuary looks at you, isn't it? In fact, I've been working with a couple of companies who sell these so-called enhanced annuities. And the sales pattern goes something along the lines of, do you smoke? Well, good. 20 a day? No, 60. Brilliant, brilliant. Overweight? No. Oh, obese. Oh, fantastic. We'll pay you more because you're going to die earlier. Anyway, again, the morbid note. Think about retirement. What are you going to do with it? That's what I was asked to talk on tonight. It's worth planning ahead. But what I'm going to do is tell you a story which someone told a long time ago, a management guru, maybe. Someone certainly with more followers than any management guru of nowadays. A guy who set up one of the longest lasting enterprises around with outposts in pretty well every part of the globe and millions of volunteers. It's bonus time. This is the sort of guy who's got a bonus on a bonus. Not necessarily quite Goldman's style of bonus, you know, the sort of GDP of a small African state, but enough certainly to retire on. You know, the ISA, that's just small change. Stakeholder for the wife, that happened a long time ago. A retirement A-Day, actually he's over the 1.5 million lifetime limit and he's put in the relevant letters or whatever. That was a company scheme he was part of a long time ago. He's paid down the mortgage, a few buy-to-let properties, a little place, actually not that little, in France. Looking forward to retirement with the best restaurants already marked out, the best wine, and so on. You clever chap, he says to himself. You've ample goods laid up for many years. Relax, eat, drink, be merry. And in one sense, we've all seen this, haven't we? And just in human terms, we know it doesn't actually work out. Those of us at KPMG will know of a partner who died while out jogging the day before his 65th birthday, having retired. And there are many who don't get that far. Let me tell you the parable, the story that was actually told. And he told them a parable, saying, "The land of a rich man produced plentifully. And he thought to himself, 'What shall I do? For I have nowhere to store my crops.' And he said, 'I will do this. I will tear down my barns and build larger ones. And there I will store all my grain and my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years. Relax, eat, drink, be merry.' But God said to him, 'Fool, this night your soul is required of you, and the things you have prepared, whose will they be? So is the one who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich towards God.'" God's verdict on that life, a one-word obituary: fool. Literally, brainless person. We might take the point of that story as being rich people shouldn't rely on their wealth. They might die tomorrow. They need to leave some legacy. Here we are, the Evening Standard last week. Charities to benefit a city rich seek place in history. The fired boss of a mighty company wanted to ask me something. How do you think history will judge me? I was tempted to say, oh, somewhere between Sir Isaac Newton and Einstein. But instead, after a pause, I replied, as someone who had a blip in an otherwise brilliant career. He had cash galore. He'd got an honour. He still sat on various boards, yet wasn't happy. His comments, pompous as they were, reflect the underlying anxiety about those at the top of the business pyramid. They may have it all, but they're worried about leaving their mark. They are preoccupied with legacy. I recall the shock in the city when it was obvious Jimmy Goldsmith was losing his battle against cancer. Since him, the great Savoy Grill in the sky has been joined by Lords Weinstock, Hanson, White, King, and others. Wealthy, powerful, brilliant, none could resist what was coming. None could take it with them. We are all human, you see, even the rich. But actually, that misses the point which is being made. The farmer didn't actually say, "You clever chap, you've ample goods laid up for many years. Relax, eat, drink, be merry." Verse 19. "And I will say to my soul, soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years. Relax, eat, drink, be merry." The point is that he's confusing nourishment of the body with satisfaction of the soul. God's verdict? Fool. This night your soul is required of you. He's assuming control of something he has no control over. Many years. Fool. This night. He's totally self-centered. See the number of times I appears. The land of a rich man produced plentifully. And he thought to himself, "What shall I do? For I have nowhere to store my crops." And he said, "I will do this. I will tear down my barns and build larger ones. And there I will store all my grain and my goods. And I will say to my soul..." Sorry, I've run out of fingers. 11 times. 11 times himself. He assumes he's in control of his life, his goods. God's verdict? Fool. It doesn't even look as if he's looked beyond his own life. The things you've prepared, whose will they be? Has he even made a will? Okay, so we could say then, rich person, look after your soul. Don't lay up treasure for yourself, but be rich toward God. Rich person, have a realistic view of the time that you've left on earth. Be rich towards God. Rich person, don't assume you're the center of the universe. Be rich towards God. Okay, that's great. That's not really relevant to people who haven't made it yet. That's just filthy rich capitalists. But even that misses the point. There are two issues. One, it's important to say what the passage isn't saying. The rich person's not condemned for being rich. There's no criticism of the land producing plentifully. And you have to look at the rest of the Bible to see that success is seen as a blessing from God. Proverbs 8:18, wisdom brings riches and honour and enduring wealth. Proverbs 10:4, the hand of the diligent makes rich. There are other passages as well that we might return to. So, the rich person isn't condemned here for being rich. And secondly, you need to look at the context as well. The parable is aimed at someone who's seeking wealth. We look a couple of verses earlier, we find that this is in the context. The parable is told to someone who shouts out in the crowd. Someone in the crowd said to him, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." But he said to them, "Man, who made me a judge or arbitrator over you?" And he said to them, "Take care and be on your guard against all covetousness, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions." I don't know, has anyone here been involved in those dreadful sessions after someone's died, splitting up a family home? I was talking only at the weekend to a lady who basically says it's doing my head in, whose, you know, brother and sister-in-law and sister are all fighting together. What a dreadful, dreadful thing. The most well-mannered of aunts turn into these dreadful screaming dervishes, as far as I can see. Well, surely Jesus is about ensuring equity and making sure that I get my rights. No. Be on your guard against all covetousness. Watch out, literally. One's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions. Be rich towards God. This is all aimed at all of us. What is really important? Don't confuse nourishment of the body with satisfaction of the soul. God's verdict will be fool. Don't think you're in control of something you have no control over. God's verdict, fool. Don't just think about number one. God's verdict, fool. You may just be saying, well, why should I bother? The wider context is that this whole passage comes after a section where this man Jesus says some pretty shocking things. Nothing is hidden. Nothing is covered up that will not be revealed, or hidden that will not be known. Therefore, whatever you've said in the dark shall be heard in the light, and what you've whispered in private rooms shall be proclaimed on the housetops. And even worse, even more shocking. I tell you, my friends, do not fear those who kill the body, and after that have nothing more they can do. I will warn you who to fear. Fear him who, after he has killed, has authority to cast into hell. Yes, I tell you, fear him. And this person who's saying all these things makes the most extraordinary claim. Someone who says that your future depends on your attitude to him. The Son of Man, he calls himself. I tell you, everyone who acknowledges me before men, the Son of Man will also acknowledge before the angels of God. But the one who denies me before men will be denied before the angels of God. So I just ask you tonight, what do you make of this arrogance, this man, Jesus Christ, this claim to be central in your life, to judge you in your future? The rich farmer lived as if God wasn't there. He lived as if there would be no judgment. God's verdict on him, the one word obituary, fool. What about you?
Can you be as rich as you want and still be a good Christian?
Pass.
I think the critical word in there is as you want, probably. Because if you take the question exactly, can you be as rich as you want? Who is the central person there? I think that's the whole point, isn't it? If you want to be as rich as you want, who's your God? Isn't it the riches and the things that you're seeking after? You know, if the question was, can you be rich as can be and still be a Christian? The answer is yes. The issue that's raised here is who is important. You know, the rich farmer was there thinking, I'm the most important one in my life. I'm the only person who matters. Does that answer the question?
Should the way that Christians provide for their retirement differ from non-believers?
Probably. In one sense. In the sense that you've got to think just beyond just yourself. So it may be, for example, that you need to carry on working for longer. That there isn't just the dream of the country cottage next to the golf course in Gillon with the, you know, it may be that there's a job to be done in supporting other, you know, work that's going on. So there are all sorts of ways that it may be different. You know, maybe you don't need so much. Maybe it's time to retire early and get stuck into a different community where you can have an influence and point people to Jesus Christ in a way that perhaps you're not. Maybe it's important to stay on longer. I don't know, is the answer. But I think it's a mindset point. You've got to think through these things in the context of what are you doing with your life? Are you having an influence on people around you? Are you doing something with all the assets that are given? Talents, the ability to reach people, the money you have, the money you might have. Sorry, that's sort of an answer for Christians, I guess. Mm-hmm.
Several times you use the phrase rich towards God. What do you mean by that?
Well, I'm very glad you asked that question. Marcus didn't allow me to speak for an hour and a half. What does rich towards God mean? Fundamentally, at its heart, it's the ability to not put yourself number one. It's actually using the things that you've been given for God, and that may be for other people. It may be feeding people who aren't fed. It may be housing people who aren't housed. It is just not taking your time, your money, as your own, but something which may be there to be used for other people and for God and for the furtherance of his kingdom. We were told elsewhere, don't store up for yourself treasures on earth, but store up for yourself treasures in heaven. And I've always taken that to mean, what is heaven about? Heaven's about other people being there. Why are they there? They're there because they know Christ as their saviour. How are they going to know? Because someone tells them about the good news about Jesus Christ. So maybe you need to use your money to tell people, or pay other people to tell people, or provide facilities so that other people can be told about Jesus Christ.
Can I slip in my own question there, following on from that? Could you just share something of your own story of who told you about Jesus and how you came to faith yourself, such that you're standing up here today telling other people about it?
No. Sorry.
I'll ask you this much harder question.
Okay, let me ask it. Yes, I was born in a Christian home. People who believed in Jesus as their personal saviour, and it sort of washed over me most of the time. I thought it was about being good, and well, frankly, I didn't like being good. It was sort of boring, and you had to go to church and that sort of thing. And then I went to various camps, and I heard about this idea. It wasn't about being good, actually. It was about a person who had taken all those sins away. He'd taken the penalty of sin away from me. Now, that's probably jargon, so it doesn't mean very much. But I think everyone feels in some way, what's wrong with the world? It's all the selfishness of other people. But when you really examine it, you find that you're selfish yourself, and you are thinking just about yourself. And there's nothing you can do about it. You can't deal with that selfishness yourself, and you need some sort of external person to come and deal with it. And that's what it was for me. So I think it was age 16, I said, this is what I want to do. And since then, have I been a good person? No, not really. But fundamentally, I've tried to live my life with somebody else to think about rather than myself. And that means, my money, well, some of it is used for, Christian work, my time, some of it, But I'm certainly not perfect, as anyone who knows me will tell you. Does that answer the question?
Mm-hmm.
No.
Yeah.
Okay, good. How many more of you?
The question that you've still got to answer is, can you reconcile the parable of the talents with your selected text of the rich farmer and his barns? I think a yes-no answer might
What
do.
Was the parable of the talents again? sorry. Yes. I think there's a talk which you can get on the website here.
There was a talk on this on a midweek about 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
So that might be a good place to go for as a first port of call.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Excellent.
I think that one we've dealt with.
Sorry. There were a couple that I sort of excluded because I realised I was running out of time and Marcus was giving me glances. There are a couple of other proverbs that you just might want to look at. Look at Proverbs 11, 24 to 26. One gives freely, yet grows all the richer. Another withholds what he should give and only suffers want. Whoever brings blessings will be enriched. The one who waters will himself be watered. The people curse him who holds back grain, but a blessing is on the head of him who sells it. I think there's something about, again, using the talents that you're given, using the possessions that you're given, spreading them around, even if it involves, selling the grain so somebody else can plant crops and so on, is the sort of concept there. So it's using the things that you've been given to grow the kingdom, if you like, can be something. But fundamentally, both things are about, who's at the centre of the parable of the talents. The person who is, you'll have to explain what the parable of the talents is, but there's one person who is told off because he takes this money, he's given money before the farmer goes away, and he hides it in the ground and nothing happens to it. And he's sort of paralysed by fear. He's just thinking about himself. He's not thinking about the instruction that he's been given, which is to go and use it and multiply it. And again, I think the idea here is this person is just using his possessions for himself. He's just interested in himself and not in anybody else.
Why has Jesus Christ lost his place in the national psyche? How can we rekindle a public debate about the Christian faith and its importance to Britain's future?
That's a very good question. From my narrow viewpoint, it is that actually we've stopped as a church talking about Jesus Christ, and we've allowed ourselves to be sidetracked into other issues. And I don't know how many people from whatever denomination really stand up for what Jesus Christ says, or puts it into the public consciousness. How do we do it? I think we just need to keep talking as individuals. We need to keep sharing, you know, what we know, and make sure that people understand what the real Jesus was about. And that involves, in turn, understanding, you know, the document that actually talks about him, would be what I think I'd say.
You've answered all the questions.
Right. Can I just make some concluding remarks? Everyone needs to go away. I think there are two possibilities. I don't know where anyone sitting here and listening is, but there are two possibilities. Either God doesn't exist, or he does exist. I mean, it's a sort of fairly bipolar thing, I think. Jesus Christ may well not have been who he said he was. He may not have been the person who lots of people who met him said he was. He may not have been raised from the dead after dying for us. He may not have been seen by 500 people who Paul tells us saw him after he was raised from the dead. But if he did do all of those things, what's God's verdict on us if we ignore him? It's fool. And I guess, sorry, I'm just looking around the room, I guess the average age in here is probably 30-ish. I'm not very good at mental arithmetic. Probably the actuaries would tell us it's a fairly healthy population here, so you've probably got 55 years or so on average to live. Maybe slightly less than that. Sort of the average takes it down a little bit. I've worked that out. That's sort of 10,000 workday evenings or something like that, or lunchtimes or something like that. So it might just be worth spending 0.05% of that checking out whether it's true or not. And there is an opportunity here. I'm just going to give a little plug for Christianity Explored, which is a course. Where is it? A course on the back of this white sheet here. A course where you can find out more about the real Jesus. And that's starting Friday, 17th of November. So I would commend that to you. Thank you very much, everyone, for coming. And thank you for whoever sorted all the canapes and have rushed around and served us as well. So thank you.
Well, thank you very much for coming, Andrew. And just to say, yes, this response card, if you could just take that and have a quick look at the back, it flags up three boxes that you might like to tick. So the first box is for this course. It's just a 5-session course beginning on Friday the 17th of November. So just 5 lunchtime sessions, 3/4 of an hour. It's a chance to find out more about the Christian faith in a small group. You can ask any questions that you want at all. So it might be appropriate for someone here. If so, please do just tick that box and put this in the wicker basket on the stairs on the left-hand side as you go out. The next box down is says, I'd like to find out more about the Christian faith but can't make that course. So if that's you, if you just can't make Friday the 17th of November for 5 lunchtimes, but you would like to find out more, please do tick that box and again leave it in the wicker basket. And if you want to know about future events, you just need to tick the final box there and leave your contact details, and again in the wicker basket on the way out. And the final thing just to let you know about, if you don't already know, is that we have lunchtime meetings here every week on Wednesday and now on Thursday. So this is a half-hour meeting. It's just a 20-minute talk teaching an aspect of the Christian faith straight from the Bible. We serve coffee around tables, so you're in and out in half an hour, and you can set your watch by that. We're very strict on time. That's, you've got 3 opportunities a week now. So it's on Wednesdays, twice at lunchtime, at 12:15 and 1:05, and Thursdays at 1:15. It's the same talk each time. So please do put that in your diaries. Come to one of those. Encourage others to come along from your workplace. And it's just a great way to find out more in a relaxed setting. Our time is gone. Thank you very much for coming. Do stay around and chat more. And there's more food, I think, left over and drinks. But thank you for coming. And thank you, Andrew, for speaking to us.